After my grandma's death, I inherited her apartment in New York. I shifted there as I could finally live rent-free. Previously, I worked as a bartender, hence getting this apartment was a huge opportunity for me to start fresh. It is a big apartment with two bedrooms and a living area with an open kitchen. As I struggled to find a new job, I decided to find a roommate. I thought their rent would help me to suffice while I look for some other earning options. I clicked some photographs of the place and posted an ad online. Within a week, I started to hear from people. I'm a 23-year-old, single woman trying to make a living of her own. Considering my comfort zone and security issues, I decide to rent the apartment to another woman, expecting she'll be easy to live with. Among the three interested applicants, I liked Annie the most. She was an average height, blonde woman who was near my age. I'm an extrovert myself, and I talk a lot. Likewise, Annie too seemed cheerful and the outgoing type to me. I wasn't just looking for a roommate, I was looking for a friend as well. Because shifting to a new city among new people did startle me a bit in the beginning. The first time she came to see the apartment, she smiled and hugged me like her own. Right at that moment, our friendship hit it off. Within 3 to 4 days, we finalized the deal and she shifted to my place. I lived in the roadside bedroom connected to the fire exit. Annie's room was across the hall on the left. She said she was a struggling artist, hence she would prefer a quiet corner of the apartment. Even though we had separate rooms, we hung out together often. We watched movies late at night, drank, and went out to grab a bite almost every other day. I never saw Annie going out with anyone else. I even asked her about her friends and family, to which she replied she grew up in a foster home and does not have anyone to call her family. I was in the exact same space after my grandma's death, so I felt bad for her. Soon, two lonely souls became family in the busiest city on the planet. After a huge round of interviews, I got a job in a small startup. I managed their accounts, and in return, they paid me more than my bartending job. Life started to look up for me. My colleagues were humble, and I liked spending time with them, too. I thought this is my final opportunity to make a career for myself, and there's no way I'm going to let it go. Soon, I started to go out with others, and Annie got left out. I asked her to join me and my new buddies, but she refused to and said she didn't want to intervene. Even though she acted like it wasn't a big deal for her, I could feel a suppressed tension in her face. One night, I came home really drunk. I rang the doorbell and waited for Annie to open the door. A minute went by, and I was wondering what took her so long when a guy answered the door. He was standing in his jeans with no shirt on and smirking at me. "Who are you?"
"I'm with Annie."
Before I could know more, I heard Annie's voice.
"Who is it, Max?"
She came out wearing her nightgown.
"Oh, Camilla. Sorry it took us some time to answer the door.
We were a bit busy, if you know what I mean."
She smiled in a flirtatious manner and held Max's hand. I immediately realized and walked in with an embarrassed face. I was going to my room when Annie said,
"Hope it's fine with you if Max comes over sometimes."
I nodded my head, saying, "Yeah, of course. This is your apartment, too." Lying in my bed that night, I couldn't shake off this weird feeling about the sudden change in Annie's behavior. I never thought of her to be the casual type. She never spoke about any boys, and suddenly she's sleeping with this random guy out of nowhere. But what's wrong with trying to find someone? So I slept on the matter. The next morning when I woke up, I saw Annie was having breakfast on her own.
"So you had fun last night, huh?"
I asked.
She smiled and said, "Yeah, I went out drinking on my own and met Max in the pub. I think I'm going to spend more time with him from now on. Hope you won't feel lonely."
I smiled awkwardly and said, "Yeah, fine with me." She suddenly got up and replied in an angry voice,
"Of course you'll be fine. Why wouldn't you? You've got new friends now."
Before I could reply, she just stormed out of the apartment, and I stood there trying to grasp what just happened. That night, Annie didn't come back home, and I figured she might be staying with Max. Around 3 a.m., I heard heavy banging on the door. I rushed and opened it in a panic. Annie was sitting on the floor, sobbing like a 9-year-old. There were bruises on her arms and face. I helped her to get inside, and we sat in the living room. After asking her, she told me Max had a mental breakdown and ended up hitting her. I got furious at this guy from seeing her condition. I immediately got up to call the cops.
Annie stopped me, saying Max had some connection with the mobs, and it wouldn't be nice to infuriate him further. She cried, saying it was all her fault, and that she shouldn't have trusted people. Seeing her break down like this, I couldn't help but console her. The toxic experience with Max affected her to such a level that she isolated herself completely. I didn't want to leave her in this condition, so I started to come home early from work and spent as much time as I could with her. Max never came back to disturb her, which gave me some relief at the end of the day. One evening, I went to buy some snacks for a movie night with Annie. On my way back home, I saw Max standing on the sidewalk laughing with some sketchy-looking dude. I couldn't stop myself, so I walked up to him.
"You crazy psycho! You know she liked you and trusted you. We could have called the cops on you for hitting her. Why did you hurt her like that?"
"That's what she told you?
If anyone is the crazy psycho, that's your roommate, dude. She was the one who constantly told me to beat her during sex. She said she liked it that way. But I'm not that type of guy, you know? So I stopped seeing her. I'd never hurt a girl just to get laid."
He walked off with his groupies and I stood there in complete awe, thinking, what the hell is going on with Annie? I wanted to check if Max was telling the truth, so I called Annie and said I'm going to a pub with my colleagues. She said in a pissed off voice,
"But you said we'll hang out like we used to."
I didn't talk much and disconnected the call. I took a shortcut and reached my apartment secretly. I climbed up the fire exit and got into my room from the window. Thank God I kept it open. As I took the first step inside, I heard dishes being thrown on the floor. The shattering sound of them got mixed with another sound, Annie's screams. She was furiously breaking and throwing stuff all around the apartment. This ruckus went on for some minutes, and then I heard the main door slam hard. I tiptoed to the living area and found the entire apartment ransacked. Annie had left the house. This was my only chance. I quickly rushed to her room. I'd never been to her room all this time. No matter what, she always kept her room locked. As I turned on the light, my blood turned ice cold. There were pictures of me pasted all over her room. I could recognize some pictures as we took some with each other all the time, but it was the others that creeped me out the most. There were pictures of me sleeping, working in the kitchen, or reading something while sitting in the living room, and all of them were taken without my knowledge. The moment I realized my roommate is stalking me in my own house, my heartbeat got faster. Apart from all those images, there was a big painting hung on the wall that I believe Annie painted herself. It showed Annie and I standing side by side and holding hands like a couple. On the top was written, "Together forever," with blood. I assumed she wrote that with her blood. Right at that moment, I realized she picked up Max from the bar to make me feel jealous. But when she realized that idea didn't work, she decided to portray him as an abuser to get my sympathy and attention. I was shocked to see how far someone can go to claim someone's attention. There's no doubt she hurt herself and came up with those bruises to make her fake story more believable.
"Did you like my artwork?"
I turned around immediately and saw Annie standing behind me with a kitchen knife in her hand.
"What the hell is all this? You stalked me in my sleep?"
"I did more than that to get you back, Camilla. I risked my life for you. That dumbass Max told you everything, huh? I just saw him and gave him what he deserved."
"What? What did you do, Annie?"
"The same thing I'm going to do to you."
She charged at me with the knife like a psycho killer. I wasn't ready for this sudden attack and fell hard on the floor. She grabbed my neck with one hand and came in to stab me. I tried my best to stop her and a violent brawl took place. While we struggled, she to kill me and I to save myself, I noticed her room window above my head. I got up with all my strength and pushed her against the window. But what happened next scarred me for life. I thought she would hit the window and fall onto the floor, but instead she broke the glass window and fell from our sixth floor apartment. Her body rumbled through the bushy trees, cutting her face and skin before hitting the hard ground. The cops came and took over. I had enough evidence to prove my innocence. Max was found stabbed to death in a dingy alley. The cops found Annie's fingerprint on his body. She might have struck him from behind while he was going home that night. I still can't figure out how she could have guessed that Max told me the truth. It has been 3 years now. I live alone in that big apartment. I've redecorated her room to office space,
But whenever my eyes go to the window, I can't help but imagine Annie telling me, Annie and Camilla, together, forever.
I come from a strict Catholic family where everything is determined by conventional morality. I had to repeatedly question myself, what will God do, before contemplating every single life choice. I got shoved into a missionary boarding school to learn the do's and don'ts of our religion. I was only 6 years old when my parents sent me away. Their harsh ideologies kind of ruined my childhood. At that age, I wanted to grow up just like every other kid in my neighborhood, being around my mom, going to the city park with my dad, but no, they were too headstrong to raise their son as a sacrificial lamb. The boarding school was located in the mountains, far away from home. It was an all-boys school, and our accommodations were in the school hostels right behind the main building. As we went on climbing the ladder of grades and standards, our rooms changed as well as roommates. 5th through 8th grades were kept in building 1, with 4 students in one room. Once shifted to high school, the school authorities gave us a bit more privacy, with 2 students sharing one hostel room. I was pretty excited when I began 9th grade because finally, after a long time, I was going to have half of the room to myself. On our first day of the new session, everyone gathered around the hall looking at the charts hanging on the bulletin board. There they were, names and room numbers for the entire high school tenure. Now, there were many new students admitted, so it wasn't a foregone conclusion that I would have a friend or a classmate I already knew as a roommate. I was going through the charts when I noticed our principal, Father Daniel, talking to an elderly couple. With them stood an average height boy about my age. He was putting his head down, so I could only see his sharp nose and bony jawline. Father Daniel gave a formal smile, and the couple shook hands with him. I realized this boy must be a newly admitted student. According to the chart in the hallway, I was paired up with someone named James Wilbur. My room was on the 3rd floor of the 2nd building. As I finally moved with all my stuff, I found the room to be empty. My roommate James was nowhere to be seen. I arranged everything in my way and started setting up my bed. I was standing facing my back to the door of the room, so I didn't realize I was being watched all this time. Suddenly, my sixth sense kicked in and I turned around. That new boy who I saw a few hours back was standing near the door and watching me in a very creepy way. For the first time, I could see his entire face. That same sharp, pointy nose accompanied with very bright eyes. I don't know why, but he kind of reminded me of Norman Bates from the movie Psycho. His facial structure bore an uncanny resemblance with him. Giving an awkward smile, I said, "You must be James. I'm Gabriel." He didn't smile back. Instead, went straight to his bed to lie down, ignoring me completely. He turned his face toward the wall. I realized he's in no mood to talk. New boys arriving at this boarding school often find it difficult to adjust at first. I remember I was just like him when I first came here, but slowly we all learned to adapt because, well, you have no choice when your parents fail to understand you. I thought it was best for him to have some space, so I let him be. When the bell for dinner rang and James still didn't get up, I got a bit worried. I slowly walked to his bed and peeked to take a look at him. He was lying with his back facing me. All of a sudden, he turned at me and screamed, "Why don't you just leave me alone?" I stepped back immediately and left the room. When I came back after study hours, it was 10 p.m. already. The entire building was in pin-drop silence. I pushed the door of the room without making any sound. James was still lying there. I didn't bother to talk to him and went to bed directly. The school rules were so strict that if anyone missed dinner or didn't show up, they had to sleep with an empty stomach. I honestly felt bad for him, but there was nothing I could do at the moment. I don't exactly remember what time it was, but I woke up hearing a spine-chilling scream and a loud thud like something heavy hit the hard floor outside. I switched on the room light and saw James wasn't there in bed. I rushed to the balcony outside and found him on the ground floor, lying in a pool of blood. He jumped from the third floor balcony, and it was his scream and bones crackle that I heard. The matrons and teachers were called immediately. James got taken away to the Hillside Army Hospital because it was the nearest one. I don't know what happened there, but he survived somehow. After a month, he came back to the school with a plastered arm and a bandage over his head. The teachers and school authorities went easy on him after his sudden suicide attempt. Some boys even said that Principal Daniel wanted to send him home. His parents even came to the school to take him back, but he refused. Out of the options, they asked him if he would like to rejoin, and he agreed without any hesitation. Father Daniel called me and asked if I would be okay to share a room with him because James has requested the school authority not to put him with anyone else. He said, and I quote, "Gabriel is my only friend here." I was highly shocked after hearing this because we never talked. James' behavior changed drastically. He came back like someone I've never met before. His shy, introverted nature was long gone. Whenever I spotted him in the corridor, I saw him chatting to other boys. All of a sudden, he was that normal kid. We started to study together and talk more. He never did mention a word about his suicide attempt and everything else, and I thought it would be better to let the past stay in the past. It was one rainy afternoon, our classes were dismissed, everyone was relaxing in their rooms with their respective friends. James was sitting on his bed watching the rain outside from the window. I, on the other hand, was writing a letter to my parents, just a cordial gesture. A bolt of lightning struck in close distance and James started to laugh. I didn't understand why he was laughing, so I asked what's the matter. He didn't say anything, just got up and started to walk back and forth in the room while laughing like before. I asked him, "Hey, are you all right?" When he looked at me with wide, bright eyes and said, "You know, Gabriel, I just found out I am a half horse and half human." "What?" "Yes, after I jumped that night, I realized I'm immortal. I mean, anyone else would have died, but I didn't. I'm invincible like that lightning bolt." I couldn't hold back my laughter anymore and said, "You are being quite funny now. What did you eat for lunch, man?" I thought he would get my joke and the matter would resolve itself, but instead, he started to mumble to himself, "I'm a half horse and half man. I'm invincible. Half horse, half man." He started scratching his head vigorously while ranting his psychotic chants. "I'm a half horse and half man. I'm immortal. No one can kill me now." Soon his behavior started to turn into violent outrage. He didn't stop scratching his head. He started to tear his facial skin with his fingernails while laughing like a maniac. "Look, there's no blood in my veins because I'm immortal." The sound of his skin tearing mixed with his crazy talk made my head throb in pain. I got up and screamed, "What the hell are you doing to yourself, James? Stop it! Father Daniel! Mrs. Warren!" I screamed in fear and started to call out to everyone I could. Our matron, Mrs. Warren, rushed inside our room with some other students behind her, hearing my scream. As they all stood and witnessed James going batshit crazy, their faces got filled with shock and terror. Mrs. Warren grabbed James' hand, screaming, "What are you doing, James? Stop hurting yourself! Call Father Daniel right now!" Some students ran to call Father Daniel, while Mrs. Warren grasped James' hands tightly to prevent him from scratching the flesh off his face. None of us were prepared for what happened next. James suddenly put all his force and set his hands free and lunged on Mrs. Warren, causing her to fall on the floor. While she laid helpless, James grabbed her jaw and started to expand her mouth with all of his strength while screaming,
I'm invincible. I am the strongest of all, and I shall prove that to this world.
We all jumped on him and tried to get him off of Mrs. Warren, but he was latched on her. No matter how we kicked and punched him, he wasn't letting Mrs. Warren go. With the pressure of his inhuman strength, he cracked open a poor woman's jaw in the next few seconds. The sound of bone crushing with torn flesh and splattered blood echoed in the entire building. Some boys screamed and ran away, seeing the horrifying murder of a 55-year-old lady at the hands of our very own schoolmate. When Father Daniel came, James was smearing his face with Mrs. Warren's blood and laughing like a maniac. Many boys left the boarding school permanently, as their parents denied keeping them there after this gruesome incident. I was one of them. I came back home and finished high school with the kids in my neighborhood. I never knew what happened to James or where he is now. But when the cops took him away, he turned towards me for one last time and said, "Gabriel, I told you I am the strongest. I will live forever." Till today, I think he suffered some undiagnosed injury during his suicide attempt that made him act this way, or maybe he was mentally unstable from the very moment he came to the boarding school. I still remember how he said to Father Daniel that I was his only friend. I don't know if he will ever come back looking for me. Will he?